Welcome in to another edition of Inside the Huddle. Sam Wirt alongside Kyle Etherington here to bring you all of the recaps from local sports this week in Clinton and Carroll counties. But we're going to head right to the phones as we've got our guest on the line. And we have Lexi Ellenwood, the head coach of the Rossville volleyball team, on the line. Lexi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's just get right into it. You're a good chunk into the season now. Just talk a little bit about your team and a lot about your squad and how the season's gone so far.
Yeah, so our season, our schedule in general, started out pretty tough. We were playing almost exclusively 3A teams for the first six or so games. And so it felt kind of difficult, I think, to begin because, you know, at the beginning of the season, regardless of who you're playing, you're still trying to figure out who's meshing well, what lineups work, you know, what strategy is going to work best for our team, what can we optimize, and where are we struggling. And to do that while also playing teams who are of significant, you know, ability was a little bit frustrating, I think, for both coaches and players. But I think the girls did a really great job of persevering through those challenges and using them to get better. Since those 3A teams, we've kind of settled into 1A play for the most part. A lot of conference games, some non-conference games, still some really great competition, and I think that the girls have really found a groove. They've continued to work through any kind of challenge or obstacle that's come their way, and I like to keep them on their toes at practice, you know, learning new skills, emphasizing new strategies, trying new lineups, things like that. And I think that this team that I have currently is just willing to do whatever it takes to be the best version of themselves. And so I think that that's carrying us really well through the thick of our season and hopefully into the postseason.
How much does that help playing some tougher competition at the beginning of the year? Obviously, it has its challenges while you're still trying to figure stuff out. But now that you've gotten into 1A play, all that experience that comes from playing those tougher opponents, that has to come into play now, doesn't it?
I completely agree. I think the biggest thing actually has been the mental toughness that you get from it, though. You know, to start out your season, you're so excited. You want to do well right off the bat. And sometimes that just doesn't happen. So when you're playing those tougher teams and, you know, you're still able to put up a really great match, even though the score doesn't look as well as you think it does, I think that it's given them the confidence and the understanding that they are capable of being a fantastic team and competing with, you know, schools that are three times our size. And so I think that the mental toughness has been really great. And that translates over to the physical toughness and the skill where they're finally having that confidence to be like, yeah, I can be this great hitter, I can be this awesome defender, I can set the ball from anywhere on the court. So I think that the confidence that it's given us has translated to those physical skills.
And Coach, thanks for joining us once again. Speaking of defending and especially the digs, you've got several players that are doing extremely well, especially from the libero position. Berkeley Lanham right now on the season, 182 digs. You also have Addie Gorbett with 162, and then Kate Meek with 146. Those are your top three. What have those three in particularly brought as far as being able to dig the ball out of the ground?
Yeah, so Berkeley in particular, her goal this year has been to cover the court. I told her at the beginning of the season, you know, as a libero, that's the job that you have. You have to be able to dig up at the net and then find the ball at the end line when it comes off of the block in the same play. You know, you have to be able to get from point A to point B quickly and efficiently and get that ball up. And she's taken that challenge to heart really well. She loves to be all over the floor. You know, she's working on different one-arm digging and diving techniques and things like that. So she's the one who's able to get those scrappy plays. Addie is, I don't know how she does it, probably because she's so lanky, but she is just able to cover that back line so well, and she reads the hitter very well so that she's already in position and doesn't have to do as much work to get those balls up. And then Kate is just the person on the team who just wants the ball all the time. She wants to touch the ball 24/7, and so she's constantly trying to figure out how she can do that more often. Even though, you know, almost every play that she's in, she's going to get the ball as a setter. She's like, I want to touch it, you know, as a digger, as a passer, whatever I can do to help my team. So I think they both, or all three, sorry, defend in very different ways. And I think that that's very beneficial that we have such a multifaceted defense.
And it's interesting that you brought up getting after the ball and being the assist person, because Kate Meek currently leading the team in assists, but you also have a sophomore, Tori Fadness, who is right on her heels with only 10 less assists. She's got 149 and Meek has got 159. Kind of talk a little bit about what they contribute, because I think the assist game is kind of lost to a lot of casual observers of volleyball.
Yeah, so I was a setter by trade, so I'm very passionate about training my setters. And I don't think people realize how integral a setter is to the way that the team runs. Like, they're the quarterback of our team. And so to have two girls who are very capable and very driven and want to see their team succeed, like, they're neither of them are about their own personal stats. They're constantly thinking about how can I set up my hitters so that they can pad their stats tonight? Like, what can I do to make sure that they're in the best position they can to get those kills, to get good swings, you know, to position their ball where it needs to go. And so I think that the mentality that they have about making it about other people is a significant contributor to the way that they're able to assist their team.
Coach, let's talk about your experience a little bit. You came in midway through last season to take over the team, and now this season, kind of your first full year on the job over at Rossville. What was that experience like? Talk about the difficulties of coming in midseason and now the opportunity that you had over the offseason to really work with the girls and now have a full season together.
Yeah, so coming in midseason, the girls had had a rough first half. They were pretty dejected, beaten down. So at that point, I wasn't necessarily coming in to coach exactly how I thought it should be coached. I was there to kind of revive their love for the game. I was taking something that someone else had already built up that season, and I was just making it better. And so I didn't necessarily get as much like personal strategy or personal influence on how we play that game. I just wanted to rekindle their love for the sport, so that they could then be driven and motivated to improve. And so once, you know, we got through last season, I then had the opportunity to really implement my own ideas, philosophies, and strategies with the girls over the summer. For example, I'm really big on defense, and, you know, we had lost our libero, one of our setters, and so we were a little bit worried about what that passing game might look like. And so I got to, you know, spend the entire summer developing players into whole players and not just, you know, hitters, setters, passers, but everybody's there to pass, everybody's there to serve, receive. And I got to, you know, really give them the knowledge that I feel like I have about the sport. And I hope that that's translated into the way that we play now. I feel like we're playing a very different game than they did at the end of the season last year. So it's been interesting. It's a lot of work being a head coach. It was a lot of work to step in the middle last season, but I feel like it's even more work now to just make sure that everything's running the way that I really feel that it should be. But I appreciate so much that the girls have really bought into everything that I've presented to them.
Absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about what you have coming up for the rest of the year. Talk a little bit about your upcoming schedule and then of course, sectional play and tournament play and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think the rest of our schedule is pretty balanced. I think everybody is 1 or 2A opponents, but everybody's got, like, no team can be overlooked for the rest of the season. Everybody's got something that we have to adjust our play to a little bit for each game, and so it's going to be a lot of film and a lot of specific details in practice, but again, luckily, we've worked out all of the major things so that we have that time to dedicate. We've got a couple important matches for us. They're going to be like Faith Christian, Sheridan, Clinton Prairie, Central Catholic. Those are ones that we're really looking forward to just because we know that they're going to present such a fun challenge with, you know, some of those are conference opponents, some of those are opponents that in the past, you know, we've come close to beating, but we haven't. And so the girls are very motivated for those games. As am I as a coach. You know, I think that those are going to be the mental and physical challenge games for the most part. So we're anxious to continue on working hard in our practices so that we can succeed in those games.
And we're not being biased here when we say we're especially excited for the October 3rd matchup between Rossville and Clinton Prairie. as that's going to be
I did hear you guys are going to be there.
Yes, absolutely. That's going to be our first ever volleyball game of the week, I believe. So we're looking forward to that very much. You mentioned that time is at a premium. You're a head coach. You teach numerous classes at Rossville, especially AP, and you've got a prom to plan because you're also the junior class sponsor. How have your assistants been integral in helping you out with this time being at such a premium as a head coach?
I have a really great squad of people. So I have Ann Beard is my varsity assistant, our JV coach who's currently coaching at the Harrison Tourney right now. Lexi Robinson has been fantastic in developing our younger players. And then I've got two volunteer assistant coaches, Maggie Boyson and Lindsay Heimlich. And everybody, again, just like in our team, brings something different to the table. So with time being such a commodity for all of us, we've been very good about being flexible and not questioning, hey, if I can't be at this practice until this time, this is what we're going to do. We're very good at communicating with each other. And so I couldn't be more grateful for the crew that I have because I would not be able to function without them. They truly do most of the work, and I just get to be the face of a program that's doing well because of them, I feel like. So very appreciative of what they do.
Well, I also think that's a testament to you, but I also think that's a testament to the people that you grew up with as far as your experience with coaches. As it stands out right now, who amongst your former coaches or former mentors do you really look to for any possible advice, or do you kind of fall back on the things that they told you when you were playing high school sports?
Yeah, I was just actually at, so I went to North White, and we just had a game at Tri-County, who was an old rival of ours, and the coach that coached there coached against me. So I was talking with her before the game, and, we were talking about things that we were both telling our teams the same things, and practices seemed just kind of repetitive and very similar. And I was telling her, that's exactly what I heard when I was growing up from Coach McIntyre, who was my volleyball coach in high school. And Coach Grittencord from Tri-County knows Coach McIntyre really well. And she's just a very well-respected coach because of the way that she carried herself. She was very team-oriented. It is always me or we before me. And if you ever had the slightest attitude or inclination that you were putting yourself before the team, that was it. You were sitting down until you figured that one out yourself. And so McIntyre and I are still very close. We talk all the time. She's at a handful of my games as well. And she has been a very helpful sounding board for when I have, struggles, whether that's player, strategy, parent, whatever it is. She's there to hear what I have to say. And she's the voice of reason because she's done it for so long. So she's a big one. And then my dad was another coach of mine in high school. And he is probably my biggest supporter. He is at every single game, no matter how far it is away from home. He's offering, insight here and there. He's giving me the motivational speeches that I need to hear. He makes everything better. And so McIntyre and my dad are the two that I rely on the most because they made me into the person and the player that I was and the coach that I am today.
Absolutely. I love that. Well, we only have a little bit more time. I want to talk about what you guys have coming up this week. If people want to tune in or come out for a match, when can they see you this week?
So we have two home games, Monday, Tuesday, and those can be viewed on RCSD Athletics YouTube website. We stream them from our huddle camera straight to YouTube. So Monday is Harrison. Tuesday, I am blanking on who Tuesday is, but then we travel to Seeger on Thursday. So I don't know if Seeger will be streamed on their end, but it won't be on our end just because we don't have access to that huddle camera at the time. But Monday, Tuesday, we will be at home, so please do come pack our gym.
There we go. We love that. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Lexi. I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you, Coach.
Coming up next, Inside the Huddle, quarter number two, we've got James Byers coming into the studio. So stay tuned. Coming up next.
Inviting you to check out our new 70-foot truck scale. That's right, 70 feet. It's practically a landmark, making it easier than ever for you to get in, get out, and be on your way. Why? Because customer service isn't just words. It's 70 feet of promise. Check it out for yourself at 751 West Washington Street in Frankfort or visit WinskyBrothers.com. Winsky Brothers, because size definitely matters.
Aloha seniors age 50 and older. Get ready to catch the wave to the 35th annual WILO Senior Fair, Hawaii 50+. Join us Wednesday, September 25th from 9 to 2 at the Community Life Center located at 2056 East Wabash Street in Frankfort, right behind the First Church of the Nazarene, for a tropical day of fun. Enjoy free admission, free breakfast, free lunch, and free entertainment. Test your luck, claim bingo, and sign up for amazing door prizes. Explore over 45 booths from local businesses and organizations offering products and services tailored just for seniors. And flu and pneumonia shots will be available too. It's all happening at the Community Life Center in Frankfort, Wednesday, September 25th. Wear your favorite Hawaiian shirt or muumuu, shake out your graph skirt, and catch the wave with WILO for a day of island fun at the 35th annual WILO Senior Fair, Hawaii 50+.
Sweet chocolate reward. Sweet chocolate reward.
This is not just the sound of someone picking up a sweet treat at Walgreens. This is the sound of someone picking up a sweet treat right after receiving all their vaccines in one trip. This is the sound of treating yourself because you protected yourself.
Stop by or schedule both your flu and COVID-19 vaccines today and grab yourself a sweet treat while you're at it. Vaccine subject to availability. State, age, and health-related restrictions may apply.
Why'd the kid jump off the boat?
I don't know. Why?
Peer pressure.
Oh. Good one, Ned.
Ned isn't funny, but Ned owns a boat, and you don't. So every time Ned tells another one of his unfunny boat puns, you're going to laugh loud and keep on laughing until you get a boat of your own.
A pier where you put a boat.
Yeah, I get it.
And when you do get a boat of your own, make sure you save money by bundling it with your home, auto, or other vehicles with Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Back now on Inside the Huddle, we've got head coach of the Frankfort Hot Dogs, James Byers, in the studio. Coach, last night, a rough game against Lebanon, a really good Lebanon team. We were just talking about how many weapons they had offensively, so many different guys to beat you, and it was really pick your poison last night.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. That Lebanon team is really talented. There's a reason why they're a top 20 team in the state. With Lark, he's a returning All-State player. He was a state placer in track. Like, the guy is an elite weapon, and 15, the quarterback, throws out amazing passes. He's great in the pocket, but then he can also move when he needs to. And then their running back is he's not a big guy. He's just really fast, and he's really elusive. So it's kind of pick your poison. Do you load the box and stop the run, or do you dedicate extra guys to try to stop Lark and their other group of wide receivers that are all really, really talented kids? And so we kind of tried to do the best of both worlds, and we showed a loaded box, and then we tried to rally underneath, because we had Lalo in the box, and then he was there to help Rob underneath when Lark ran any in-cutting routes. So we tried to balance it. I mean, obviously, we can't give him a short field. That's a big thing. Like, we got to make them drive and at least make them cross the 50. And so, like, special teams and stuff like that become hugely important. And when you're not snapping the ball well and we're not punting the ball well, like, that really pins our defense. Like, I mean, we probably had more yards of offense than they did because they were driving from the 30.
Yeah, there was a couple of block punts, one punt that it was just a rough snap and the guy had to start running with it. And then the sacks also kind of pinned you back deep and forced your punter into rough situations.
Yeah, they were pretty heavy blitz pressure all night. And we started, we're so banged up right now. I mean, our injured reserve list is about as long as our active list. And so we're going sophomore at left tackle, sophomore at guard, junior at center, sophomore at right guard, sophomore at right tackle.
Yeah.
And so sometimes the adjustments within the game, the speed of the game, picking up those blitz pressures, picking up those twist stunts, that can be tough for a veteran offensive line, let alone, you know, a young offensive line. And so it was a little baptism by fire for those guys up front, especially for Naaman and Daniel, who were getting their first significant action on the O-line on a Friday night. It's a lot different on Tuesday and Wednesday. when you're playing the scout team than on Friday when you're playing a varsity football team.
How well have those guys responded to that baptism through fire? Were they apprehensive and you guys had to coach them up a little bit, or were they just sitting on the spring on the bench and just rip-raring, ready to go?
You know, Naaman's got a lot of reps defensively this year. He's been a varsity guy all year, but it's been on the other side of the ball. And same with Daniel. Daniel's got a lot of playing time defensively, but this was the first time. So, like, the situation of a Friday night wasn't too big for them. It's just the different looks now. Now, instead of being the guy who's trying to beat blocks, now you're the guy trying to make blocks and listen to the audible calls and know the snap count and know the play call. And there's a lot more stuff that goes into offense. Sometimes defensively, you can just be like, hey, see ball, hit ball. Versus on offense, there's a lot of things that go into it. Hey, are we running, 34G or are we running 34 trap? Those are two different blocking schemes. And you got to know the difference between the two, and then you got to know how to pick the blitz up off the two different blocking schemes.
And I'd like to think that Omaha is definitely called for an audible. Is that true not?
Well, hey, and honestly, I started using Omaha before Peyton Manning made it famous. That was always one of our calls at Jimtown.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime we checked opposite under Coach Sharp, it was always Omaha. And then Peyton goes on there and says it, gets sponsored by Omaha Steaks. And I'm like, hey, man, where's our steaks? We won a state title yelling Omaha.
You don't have to worry about that too much. I remember coaching eighth grade girls basketball, and I would shout Omaha, and parents would say, why do you call it Omaha? And I said, I just like yelling that out loud, because of Peyton. But if I was on the line blocking for Lalo Castillo, that would give me a little hitch in my giddy up and everything. You talked with Sam earlier in the week about him getting some looks from some colleges. Is he wanting to play college football on defense, offense, or is he looking for anything right now?
He's actually going on a recruiting trip today down to Franklin.
Nice.
So get to take in that experience. We have three guys down at Franklin playing right now, and one guy from our football team is playing baseball down there. But Charlie Garcia, Keith Pippinger, and Nelson Honor are all down there on the football team. So it'll be nice to go down and see those guys, and it'll be nice for Lalo to get that first official visit in. I think he's kind of open to whatever. I mean, the guy's played pretty much every position on the field except for O-line, which, who knows, maybe we got to put him at guard this week. I don't know, but we'll have him snap the ball to himself. He can play. He could play the corner. He could play a nickel corner. He could play free safety. He could play a slot receiver. He's got such good vision that he could play a running back at college. He's really, really versatile and really tough. I mean, he's going to pack on some pounds when he gets to college. He's like 5'9", 170 right now. So they'll get him in the weight room. They'll get him on a meal plan, and they'll put some weight on him, and he could kind of do whatever. And that's a really valuable asset to have. Like, he goes in with a wealth of experience at every position, and so he's kind of just like, hey, coach, put me where you need me.
Absolutely, and probably his best play of the game yesterday was as a wide receiver going out with a little wheel route and making a great play over a defender, staying on his feet and finding the end zone.
Yeah, that was an incredible catch. Great ball by Dennis. Our protection finally held up to give Dennis enough time to get to that deeper route, and then he made a great play over the top of that kid. And then, like you said, the ability to keep his balance, right? Like, that was a very off-balance catch. His body was in an awkward position up in the air. And then to have that physical ability to land, maintain his balance, and then get going again back to top speed, that's impressive. Like, there's no way I could do it. That's why I played O-line.
You had a couple of really nice passing plays, one in the first half and then that one to Lalo. The one in the first half set you up. It was only 14-0 at that point, and R.J. Kornman made a great catch and run down inside the 30-yard line, and then the drive kind of stalled out. That's something we talked about, where you were so good inside from 20 to 20.
20 to 20,
and then once the field gets a little smaller and the defense starts locking up, it gets a lot tougher to get in the end zone.
That's been that's been kind of the story of our year this year, is we are a really solid offense from 20 to 20. We've moved the ball on every team we've played, but they haven't resulted in touchdowns. And that's the big challenge for our staff right now, is what do we need to do differently, or what do we need to do better to get these kids in better positions to be efficient and be effective down in the red zone when the field's condensed, everything's tighter, your blitz packages can become a lot more exotic because you can play a lot more man down there. And so how do we, A, quit shooting ourselves in the foot, because a lot of it has been we'll get false starts down there or we'll get holding calls down there. And that wasn't the case Friday, but the blitz pressures got to us in the red zone. And so how do we get our better execution, the best execution that we can inside the 20?
What was the conversation like with Dennis Barkley after that interception returned for a touchdown and ended up being a pick six? What did you say to him real quickly on the sideline? Because he's got to go back out there now right away and lead the offense. So what was the message to him after that?
Have you ever seen Ted Lasso?
Yeah, I have.
That part where he asked what animal has the shortest memory?
Yeah.
That's what I asked him. And it's a goldfish, right? You got to have a short memory when you're a quarterback. And I told him, be Brett Favre, right? Just be a gunslinger. That's who he is. He's a gunslinger. He plays with, freedom. And he sometimes you make mistakes. When the ball's in your hand every play, you're going to make some great plays and you're going to make some bad plays. Like that kid, that Lebanon kid made a heck of a play robbing underneath that route. Like you go back on film and I see what Dennis sees. Off the break, the out is wide open and he's throwing it on a rope and that kid undercuts it. And heck of a play. Tip the hat to that kid. Right?
Yeah.
Like they're players too, right? They're getting coached up too. And so if Dennis throws it a second earlier or holds it a second longer and he sees that kid, he can maybe put a little bit more touch on it. But, you know, in the moment, you know, I slowed that film down last night and the moment he threw it, I was like, that route's open. And then the next clip, like the next frame, that kid's cutting underneath it and you're like, oh man. And I told him, hey, be a gunslinger, be Brett Favre. Just go out there and keep chucking it. And he did. He's a great leader for our team. He's a great kid. He's a guy that people rally around. And he's just a fun guy to coach.
And Lebanon did a fantastic job, I thought, of just timing the snap and everything like that. How did your assistants work to coach up your players having to deal with that type of pressure? Because it seemed as if they had it timed down to the millisecond of when the ball would be snapped in order to come, especially up the middle. They had some outside rushes, but especially up the middle. How did your assistants kind of coach up your players to just kind of be ready for that?
We made the adjustment to start stepping harder inside, right, rather than our normal zone step where we're all stepping the same direction, right? So if it's inside zone left, we're all stepping left. So the change was, all right, hey, we're getting heavy interior pressure. Everybody's stepping inside now on inside zone, and we're going to pick up the first interior gap to kind of create outside cutback lanes. And that's definitely something you saw in the second half where we didn't have as much of that blitz pressure taken account. And we even changed our snap count up a lot this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went on a variety of snap counts, and those Lebanon guys did a really good job of timing it up well and just getting in and rushing hard. We got them to jump off sides once or twice. But then their blitz pressure up the middle was pretty effective for them all night.
Well, before we wrap up this segment on Inside the Huddle, I want to talk a little bit about next week. You got Western Boone. You go back at home. They got to play at Frankfort. Talk about just some initial thoughts about that matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Weibo's a great program. Coach Pelly has got a lot of great things going on down there. I think they're number 5 in the state right now in 2A. They've won 3 state titles since I've been the head coach at Frankfort. And they got another great roster. You know, the quarterback is a good player. They got a wide receiver, number 11, who's a really, really talented athlete, kind of similar to Lark. And then they got a tough-nosed fullback who they like to run the ball with. And he's actually right behind Lalo right now in rushing yards in the conference. I think Lalo's first and he's second, if I remember right. And they went to Tri-West and beat Tri-West in a close one. So we're going to have our hands full. Hopefully we can get healthy this week. Hopefully we can get some guys cleared and get some guys off of that injured list and be able to get some some starters back. We get Jackson Woods back this week, which is a huge help for us, especially offensively, because a lot of our offense is predicated on having a fullback,
mm-hmm.
right? We're running that old school Jimtown eye. And to run the eye, you kind of need a fullback. And Jackson's so big and so strong and has such great feet. Like, he makes a tremendous lead blocker for Lalo. But then he's also dynamic and can make plays with the ball in his hands, and he can run a lot of routes. So getting him back this week is going to be huge for us. And then just, you know, settling in and running the ball, controlling the clock, and then finishing those drives. I mean, that Southmont game, we kind of put on a clinic that first drive. Holy cow, it was like 14 plays, 9 minutes. We took up the whole first quarter and then come away with 0 points. And that's been our big emphasis, is like, you guys are doing all the things right. Like, we know you can do all the things right. You've done all the things right. Now you just have to do them right in the red zone, right? It can't be a some of the time thing. Being great's an all the time thing. And it's got to be that mentality on every snap of the ball, doing my job to perfection. So, you know, we know we got a big, big task ahead of us. We know Weibo's going to be big. They're going to be physical. They're going to have the ability to run the ball inside and throw the ball outside. Very similar to what Lebanon did. And we're going to have to tackle better this week. We're going to have to rally to the ball defensively. And then, you know, we're going to have to make some plays on offense and special teams, right? We're going to have to kick the ball well so that we're not playing defense on our side of the 50. We need to kick the ball deep and play defense on their side of the field and make them drive, make them earn every yard, make them earn every possession, and give us a chance to be in a close game.
Well, thank you, Coach, for coming on Inside the Huddle. Good luck next week in your matchup against Weibo.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, that ends quarter two here on Inside the Huddle. We've got quarter three coming up with head coach Kimberly Deck of the Clinton Central girls golf team. They've got sectionals coming up. Stay tuned. You're listening to Inside the Huddle.